been a minute.
Has it?
I mean, it's been
Hasn't it just been a week?
Maybe. I don't know. Has it only been a week? Yeah. Was last week our break because we didn't record on the 27th? Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
So okay. We recorded on...
It's been a week.
It's been a week. I was going to say, I mean, it all kind of runs together after a while. I'm like, I don't know. I barely even know what day. I was just thinking about how, for some reason, I just had a little flash of that tomorrow's Friday. And I was like, what are you talking about? No, it's not.
No, it's not.
No way. All right. So in addition to our, you know, all of our talk about, that's kind of a good segue between overeating and poop sounds because they kind of have gone hand in hand and bodily sounds and all in general.
God, yeah.
Should we get going?
Yeah, might as well.
All right. Welcome to No Hugging, No Learning.
It's the show about one thing, watching Curb Your Enthusiasm for the first time.
I'm Tim Murphy.
And I'm Ted Hollowell.
And today we will be talking about Season 10, Episode 9, Beep Panic. But before that, what is the deal with stuff from our last episode? Elizabeth, Margaret, and Larry. The big question we had is, like Cassie says, is the term Lazy Susan racially and or, it's not sexily, what's the word I'm looking for? I was going to say racially insensitive, and is it also sexually
and or sexist?
Yeah, racist and or sexist. But how would you say race? You know, can you say racially insensitive?
Racially insensitive or misogynistic?
I like sexually insensitive.
Sexually insensitive. Yeah,
oh, sexually.
We'll roll with that.
Sexually insensitive. I was saying sexily.
Sexily.
S-E-X-I-L-Y. Yeah, because racially and sexily.
I think that's Zap Brannigan word from Futurama. Yeah. So someone calls him sexually aggressive, and he's like, I was sexually aggressive.
I think you're right. That is how dumb I am, that I think Zap Brannigan uses real words. But, to me, sexily is a word. Oh, she did that dance very sexily, you know, because she was very sexy during it. I think sexily, I'm going to say it's a word, even though I know it's not. So all we wanted to know is Lazy Susan problematic? I checked a bunch of different websites, Words with Boards, which sells Lazy Susan. So they kind of have an agenda. Family Handyman, which you can probably learn to build a Lazy Susan there. The LA Times did an article that a lot of people cited about this. So first of all, people think that the name came from Thomas Jefferson or Thomas Edison. And they invented the thing and then they named it after their sluggish daughters. So each, I guess, had daughters named Susan. They invented this thing like, I'll call it a Lazy Susan after my lazy daughter, Susan Jefferson.
Jesus Christ.
But historians say there's no proof to back either claim. So the earliest known Lazy Susan-like object dates back to like the 1720s, the 1730s in England. One from 1780 was sold at Christie's in 2010 for $3,800, which is not a lot. So if you're holding on to a Lazy Susan that was handed down for generations, don't expect it to pull a lot of money. That tray was made of mahogany and was 16 inches in diameter. Historians can trace the concept, to 18th century England, say it may have become popular at a time when household servants were declining in supply. And it used to be called a dumbwaiter. So you might be thinking, wait, I thought a dumbwaiter was those little manual elevator that brought food from the bottom. Yeah, it was both. They just referred to them. Anything that served you food that couldn't talk was called a dumbwaiter, I guess. In the 18th and 19th centuries, the term referred to both elevators and rotating trays and tables. An early use of the Lazy Susan in the U.S. was possibly in 1891, when Elizabeth Howell of Missouri was granted a patent for a self-waiting table, as she called it. And despite various folk etymologies linking the name to Thomas Jefferson and Thomas Edison's daughters, the earliest use of being called a Lazy Susan dates to the 1903 Boston Journal, at least in print. John B. Laurie, it said, as the resuscitator of Lazy Susan, seems destined to leap into fortune as an individual worker. Lazy Susan is a step towards the ever-vexing servant problem. She can be seen but not heard, nor can she hear. She simply minds her business and carries out your orders in a jiffy. So a little misogynist, but that's not, you know, that's not anybody's fault, I guess, except whoever named the Lazy Susan, which, again, we don't know. Another early use was in 1917, when in the December issue of Vanity Fair, a department store called Ovington's advertised, again, a 16-inch rotating mahogany tray that said, $8.50 forever seems an impossibly low wage for a good servant. And yet here you are, Lazy Susan, the cleverest waitress in the world. That's what the copy said. In 1933, the term was added to Webster's dictionary. Lazy Susans themselves declined in popularity from the late, like, 1910s and on to 1950s, when it became popular again thanks to its ubiquitous use in Chinese restaurants, first in San Francisco, then throughout the U.S., especially with the post-World War I and II domestic service decline, like that having people like maids and people living in your home that waited on you just kind of went out of style, I guess. Not only style, but it just there were no servants around. So that's when the Lazy Susan came back into play. You could make an argument for it, the name being misogynist, just because of the way people talked about him, but we don't really know the motivation of the person who named the Lazy Susan, only that it was named after what would be maybe a good servant's name, I guess. Although I saw that like Susan wasn't even a popular name back when that first started popping up. So I don't know.
It almost seems directly related to one of the inventor's children, who was, as they put it, a little sloth-like.
It's possible, although, like I said, historians don't even know if Jefferson or Edison even had anything to do with the invention of it. That's just kind of like, a folk tale, I guess. I don't have any answer as to who actually invented it, but I don't think you could make a case for it being racist, maybe sexist. If you really wanted to, just going back to like, well, look at the way people wrote about it.
Yeah,
oh, if only women couldn't.
One.
Yeah. If only women couldn't talk. Well, guess what? We've got for you a spinning little table you put on your big table. It's kind of how they sold it. So you could say the marketers were sexist.
Yes. The inventors. The inventor. Not necessarily. Yeah.
I love my daughter.
It was the time. So
I wanted to honor my ambitious daughter by inventing this.
Kind of comes with the territory.
Yeah, exactly. It was a different time, Ted.
It was a different time.
I did a lot more research about this, but I won't bore anybody with it. For extra credit, yeah.
No. Go ahead with your extra credit.
For extra credit, I did look up rule of thumb.
I do have a follow-up question, though.
Because I did look up rule of thumb, because what I talked about at the beginning of Boondock Saints, where she said, in whatever medieval England, you could beat your wife as long as you did it with something that wasn't wider than your thumb. And that was a popular, again, another folk theory that, that wife beating was legal as long as you had, as long as you had a stick no wider than your thumb. And no such law ever existed. There was a rumored statement by a judge who supposedly said something like that, but there's no record that he said that except people making fun of him for saying that. So it's not like in an official court document or anything like that. Only people saying, can you believe what Sir Francis Bueller said, that a guy could beat his wife? And so he got like credit for this when he may not have said that at all. But it did become so associated with domestic abuse that it has been cited that legal definition has been cited in like law journals and in a report by the United States Commission on Civil Rights. They published a report on domestic abuse called Under the Rule of Thumb. So a lot of people were like, made an effort to discourage that false origin, but it's still obviously, I didn't know that it wasn't fake to this day. I heard about it in a movie. And so we don't know the exact origin of that phrase, only that, thumbs have been used to sort of measure stuff approximately, which is what rule of thumb means. It's like to not measure exactly, but go on experience and just sort of estimating. And everybody used their people who sold cloth used to like say, my thumb is an inch. So there's an inch. We don't have to get like a ruler into it. Brewers used to like measure the heat of tanks by using their thumb and stuff like that. The earliest appearance in print comes from 1685. By a Scottish preacher named James Durham, who said, many Christians are like to foolish builders who build by guess and by rule of thumb and not by square and rule. So that's like the actual meaning, the approximate method for doing something. So it comes from that, not from, this made up British law that you could beat your wife with something as long as it wasn't as big as your thumb. So there we go. It was still pretty long, but believe me, I had a little bit more.
The follow-up question that I had was about Lazy Susans. Did you have any Lazy Susans in your house, like, growing up? Because it would have been, like, 10-ish years before I did.
The closest I would have are those cabinets that sort of spun around. I don't know if you want to call them Lazy Susans.
That's what I'm referring to. We had the corner cabinets that were on a Lazy Susan. We had one for cereal and then the other for, like, pots and pans and lids and bowls and stuff like that.
Yeah, and they'd always you'd always try to spin them, and then like a handle would get stuck, and, just like knock everything off.
On the one with the pots and pans, it was a mess. But the cereal one over on the left hand side of our kitchen always like spun very freely.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I remember when you try to put something with a handle, and it would get jammed between the corner where it can't where it spun around. Like, God damn it, and you have to like reach your hand through a tiny little slot to find the thing because it won't open all the way. those weren't great, but yeah, I would say that's as close as I got. I never had one on a table. You know, with like food or napkins or whatever, like Larry was using. You know, interestingly enough, using with Chinese food or what looked like, I'm guessing, Chinese food. And that's why they sort of came back to prominence in the U.S. because they started being used in Chinese restaurants. So, yeah, but never one on the table. Maybe they'll come back. That's the next thing Gen Z needs to bring back.
Is Lazy Susan's?
Lazy Susan talk is blowing up, Ted.
Oh, God, no.
That's right. Lazy Susan ASMR is happening. So, yeah, that's all I have for that's all we had for trivia and tidbits. There was nothing else interesting about the episode at all.
Cool. Any other news or anything?
I don't think so. Besides the fact that, I mean, Curb ended. I don't know when you're listening to this, but pretty big news.
As of our record, Curb's over.
Yeah. Yay. But if you really want to hear us talk about it, you should have been a patron.
Yeah. I mean, you can still go sign up.
You still can.
You can listen to all of our DTMs. They're out now. Yeah. Go listen to all of those.
In fact, we got a huge spoiler for this season in the series finale.
We do. Did you? We do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's whatever. I figured it wasn't just going to end and everyone's happy and they're friends again. Like, I figured something was going to happen. I was kind of surprised that was what happened, but
I know.
All right.
And we still don't know the story, but we'll find out.
We don't know what
we'll
happens. And there was a comment in there of like, well, no, I didn't do this. It happened because insert thing here that I'm like, I have no idea what Larry's talking about.
Exactly.
So I'm excited to hear how they get there.
It raised more questions than it answered,
but we did get a little bit
of a spoiler. But yeah, if you want to enjoy the new season and jump ahead with us a little bit, highly recommend being a patron.
Speaking of patrons, we'll get into that in just a second. But if you have never listened to us before, we are not a research-heavy show, despite the last 30 minutes. On my record, it's 59, but we got like 25 minutes of the season 12 ep in there. So 30-ish minutes, being almost exclusively research and bullshit. We like to have our questions pop up naturally in the run of the episode and assign them to ourselves the week following as though we are giving ourselves homework. I've never seen these episodes before. Tim has never seen these episodes before. If we miss anything, if we egregiously skip over anything, please send us an email or send us a tweet. It's at nohugging on Twitter, nohugging_nolearning on Instagram, or nohuggingnolearningshow@gmail.com. All those links down in the description. If you like the show, please give us a 5-star rating and a written review on Apple Podcasts or a 5-star rating on Spotify. If you've done either of those, or maybe you don't use either of those apps, and you would still like to find a way to support the show, would you consider joining us over on Patreon? It's patreon.com/nohugging, again, linked down in the description, where you can get 7 days free if you join the $5 a month tier. It's not going to charge you first, and I don't even think it asks you for your card info at sign up. I think it just gives you 7 days free access, and then after the 7 days, if you don't want to spend any money on us, you're not obligated to.
Asshole.
Totally wrong on that, though. I don't think I am. I don't think I am, anyway. But yeah, 7 days free, patreon.com/nohugging. You get early access to extended versions of every episode that we release and shorty episodes for all of season 12. Patreon.com/nohugging. Want to shout out the people who are joining us over there, like Just Dan, Liam M., Michael Klatsky, Derek Wayne, Nate Collins, Tamara Ortiz, the guys and gals over at the Idiotville Podcast, John Murphy, Danica Ligorio, J-Dog Conlord, Nick Kudla, Adam Webb, and Megan Stolarski. Thank you guys so much. Again, patreon.com/nohugging. But of course, Tim, on Patreon isn't the only way they can support the podcast.
That's right. Maybe you're listening to us and you're going like, screw these guys. I want to make some of that sweet Patreon coin. Well, guess what? You got to start your podcast first. And the best place to do that is Libsyn, Libsyn. Go to Libsyn.com. Use the promo code HUGGING. You can get up to 2 months free, and you can start building your audience with Libsyn. They help you out. They make sure your podcast is where all of the ears are. We've always done our podcast on Libsyn. In fact, we're recording it with the help of Libsyn right now. Yeah, if you go through life changes with your podcast host and you start in the same city and then you end up 2,000-3,000 miles apart, whatever it might be, that, you know, Libsyn can help you out. Libsyn can help you out there, too. Ted, you know I'm horrible at estimating.
I know. It's okay.
Anything involving, I mean, yeah. I you're lucky I didn't go into the millions. But
if you're a million miles away, they are all the way around the Earth and then back to being about 1,300 miles away.
Yeah, no exaggeration. go to Libsyn.com. Use the promo code HUGGING. Get up to 2 months free when you start your podcast journey to riches untold. Now that's a good way to end a pitch. I mean, when you put the adjective after the noun, it adds just so much damn gravitas.
It does. Like, it really does.
Ted, I'm like a real copywriter now. I don't know if you know that, but like, I write a ton of copy. And
riches untold. Fuck off. All of that being said, season 10, episode 9, Beep Panic. Original air date, March 15th, 2020. And if you're looking at TV Guide that night, you're going to see Larry finds himself indebted to a struggling waitress and draws the ire of Mocha Joe.
I mean, he already did the second part. Yeah, really could have been.
He's already,
yeah.
He's already got the ire of Mocha Joe, doesn't he?
Yeah, like, yeah.
That's like
how
saying.
How could he draw?
That's like saying, and he makes the person who hates him a little bit upset. Like, yeah. No, duh. He already hates him.
It's like and the guy who hates him hates him again. Like what?
The guy who hates him still hates him. Hates him.
I think we might be able to make that better, but we'll see when we get to the end. I have to say the title Beep Panic made me think of the Oasis deep cut Gas Panic, and I can't stop singing the lyrics to Gas Panic because I'm saying Beep Panic instead of Gas Panic. If there are any other Oasis heads out there, Gallagher heads. We'll call them, which are different from the comic.
Gallagheads.
Exactly. So Beat Panic, we have a cold open before the title card. Just, it was kind of jarring to me because I was like, wait, something is different about this. And I was like, oh yeah, it opened with Larry in like this fake commercial for Latte Larry's. And then we get Frolic. Did you notice that?
I did.
It stuck out to me. I was like, but this is, wait. Because you're like, hi, Larry David here. I'm like, well, hang on a second. This feels normal, but yeah. And the line in the commercial that stuck out to me is no defecators. He really spends like 10 seconds of this ad, if not like more.
If you're a defecator, we don't want you here. Don't come here.
Imagine making a commercial and pointing out people you don't want to come to your business. No defecators. Go somewhere else. So then we get Frolic and the actual title card and opening and stuff after the commercial's over. And Latte Larry's has opened. It has opened very well. The P Cube is a hit. That's getting compliments.
People are loving the place.
Yeah, it's very crowded. Leon is doing well. He even wants an official title now, and they settle on Beanmeister.
What was the one that he wanted originally? Bean something?
I don't remember. Bean Dude? I don't remember what it was.
Was it like Bean Chairman or something?
Yeah, they were settling on trying to find a good title, and they settled on Beanmeister. As opposed to Latte Larry's, Mocha Joe's is mostly empty. There's a couple of people sitting around and Ted Danson. And Mocha Joe can't go spy on Larry because he's banned. And so is Mocha Jane. She's banned as well.
Yeah, Larry banned his mom.
Which is awesome and very spiteful. As you know, so Ted is going to go over there and spy. And you can tell that he's very impressed with the taste of the coffee and everything. Everything's going really well. And just to try, you know, a last-ditch effort to get into Larry's head, Ted tells him that he's going out with Cheryl again. And I think Larry knows that Ted's kind of grasping at straws because he's like, well, have a good time. He's like, you know, she's a fun woman. He's like, a lot of fun or something like that. Like, he's not letting Ted get to him. Like, the spite is working. It's like firing on all cylinders. And even Mocha Joe is impressed with the beans. Mocha Joe gets a taste of Ted's coffee, and even he's like, damn it, he got the beans. It's all about the beans. It's not going well for Mocha Joe. Driving, Larry's in the 15,000 block of Magnolia Boulevard, and he is, oh, I forget what city that, you know, what actual section of LA that is, but oh well. Larry is scrolling on his phone when the light turns green. And the guy behind him beeps, and Larry throws his phone, is so surprised, he like throws his phone across the car and you know, immediately just like pulls out into traffic because the light has turned green. As he explains at the country club, this is beep panic. Freddie Funkhauser and Jeff are there, and he's explaining, you know, what happens. He throws it through his phone, and you know, beep panic is very dangerous. I don't know what he wants other drivers to do about it, because it is a beepable offense. You know, you can tell when someone's like looking down at their phone, or even sometimes they've left it in the holder and they're scrolling and not looking. And you're like, I can see where you're doing, like, in light's green, you know, like this deserves a beep. But they're like, I could kill someone. What if I, you know, throw my phone out the window? And they come up with this hilarious scenario about beep panic ending with a baby being run over. And then Larry's like, and then I'm you know, I'm up for manslaughter. And Jeff's like, or counterpoint, that baby was the future Hitler.
Jesus Christ. And I love Freddie and Larry saying, we had a whole scenario. It was realistic. You didn't need to bring that sci-fi shit into it.
They get mad at him. It was real. This was about real people.
This was about real people.
They get mad at him. And Jeff did kind of no-butt them, but it was a funny no-butt. You know, it was like, yeah, I'm not going to yes and. I mean, it was in some way a yes and, because it was like, yes, you killed a baby, and it was future Hitler. Like, it wasn't a bad scenario, but I love how mad they were making up this absurd story, and Jeff ruined it with that, the baby dying being a good thing. Susie is out of town, and Jeff proposes a golf trip with the boys to Pebble Beach. And they suggest a fourth, Richard Lewis. It's going to be great. Although they don't know if they can get him out of rehearsal, because he's rehearsing right now for Flowers for Algernon, which I'm not really familiar with. I don't know if
I don't really know much about it either.
Yeah. All right. Maybe I'll put it down for some homework then. We'll maybe just do a shallow dive on Flowers for Algernon, because I guess the character he's playing that everyone seems to be familiar with is this mentally challenged character.
I did pick up on that much, though. Yikes.
And so this is lampooning something, though, and Jeff is like, all my clients want to do this. They feel like they're not actors. It's like an acting challenge. They feel like they're not actors unless they can play a character like this. And, I mean, you get that, right? I mean, that is an actual thing. You know, another piece of media that Lampoon did very well is Tropic Thunder.
Oh, God.
Ben Stiller.
I was going to say Robert Downey Jr., too.
He even did a different thing where he's playing a different race, but I mean they talk about how actors love to do this mentally challenged character thing, and Jeff's like, they feel like they're not really real actors if they can't do this. And so it took a little wind out of that, you know, I don't know what you'd call it, because it's not ego, it's like, but they do feel like I'm doing something very important by being this character right now, you know, like it's self-important, I guess. I don't know what what I'd call it, but Richard Lewis is now, it's funny that they're making the Curb universe Richard Lewis do this and be this like stuffed shirt actor trying to do this, but and Larry can't wait to see his friend fail. That's one thing that I loved about it. He's like, I'm gonna be at every performance. Then the waitress comes over, her name's Diane, and she apologizes for the delay. They're waiting for their meal forever. She's like, I'm sorry about the delay. I have diarrhea. And then this was a great beat too, because she slaps the table before she walks away. So she puts it, you know, her hands were all over their plates and everything. Mm-hmm. And then she contaminates the table.
Mm-hmm. Like, all right, silence. Enjoy.
Yeah. And like the silence, and nobody has to say anything. They all just get
up. They all just get up and leave. I mean, they do eventually start talking again, yeah. But like well after they're already up and walking away.
I think they talk about, and maybe I misspoke, did she say I had diarrhea or I have?
Well, it's Jeff that asks.
Yeah.
Did she say have or had? And Larry clarifies it's neither. He says has.
Oh, well that, did she say I has diarrhea?
I think he's not saying it as though that's what she said, but yeah. He's saying it like in context of like, you know, the switching perspective.
Yeah. So in that case, she did say have.
Yes.
I have. Sorry for the delay. I have diarrhea.
Yeah. Currently, actively. Yeah.
And they all, I mean, in this case, I might have to do the, I know we have talked about, you know, our thresholds as far as what disgusting food we would eat, whether there's a hair on it that we can pull off.
You think this would be your limit? You think you wouldn't partake? If a waiter comes by and says, "Hey, I'm so sorry. Here's your ribs. I have diarrhea right now."
I just how you. I like that the meal was on time in that case. maybe he said, "I'm sorry" beforehand, and that was the indicated delay. But I like that. I like thinking that the meal was on time. Like, all right, here's your food. I have diarrhea. And do you need anything else?
If you need anything else, flag down someone else because I am going to be blowing it up.
I just think about the fact that if you have diarrhea, you're not supposed to go in a public pool. And I'm like, wow, it spreads that easily. I might ask for, I don't know, I might flag a manager down to see what I should do. Like, hey, did you know this is going on? Like, yeah, it might disgust me to that point. Like, there's a lot of disgusting stuff in this. This was the grossest episode we might have seen so far. I can't think of anything grosser in this than what happens in this episode. And this is just part one. By the way, I wrote this down and I didn't confirm it until I watched the credits later. But did you recognize from Broad City, Abby Jacobson?
No, I didn't even recognize this is her.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, cool.
And I never watched Broad City. I've just seen the promos. But yeah, Abby Jacobson of Broad City and other stuff, I'm sure. I think she was in that. Was she the one? I know there's two Broads in Broad City. I think you're allowed to say that if you're talking about. That's the only. That's the only time you're allowed to say
it. I don't know.
But I know one of them was in the A League of Their Own remake that filmed a little bit in Pittsburgh, I think. I can't remember if it was her or not. But this is her in this. Probably already famous by this point because it is 2020. Broad City's already been on, maybe even off Comedy Central. So the guys walk. They end up just walking out, I think without paying, which I think is, again, you're allowed to do that if you haven't touched it and your server has diarrhea. Larry says he's going to go, I guess instead of lunch, have the best licorice he's ever had at Century West BMW.
Yeah,
well, your trusted.
He says he's going to go to the BMW dealership.
Yes, the BMW dealership. But it does happen to be.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah,
Century West BMW, your trusted BMW dealer in North Hollywood. This location is at 4245 Lancashire Boulevard. And Larry makes up a fake issue his car is having so he can go into the showroom and get the free licorice, which, by the way, does look damn good. I got to say, this licorice. I'm not even a licorice fan, and I was like, yeah, I would try some of that red licorice.
I'm not a licorice person, so this didn't really do anything for me.
Yeah, I'm not either. My dad, Twizzlers are his favorite candy across the board. I don't know if I've seen him have another candy. Yeah, Twizzler maniac. And so I kind of grew, because they were always in the house, and when I wanted something sweet as a kid, I was like, guess it's Twizzlers, nothing else around, because we weren't a big sweets family. Twizzlers were it, and so that red black licorice, ugh, Satan's asshole is what it tastes like. But I would try this. It looked like the hot sausages that you can get at some gas stations that are sometimes like loose, you know, and sitting in juice. Yes. It looked like a jar of loose hot sausage, and then whatever the black licorice would be. It was that big. I was like, I'd have to try some of this. I got it. Larry made it sound really appetizing. The salesman, though, is suspicious because Larry has been in there a lot with all of these random issues for his car, and they can never find out what's wrong. And yet Larry's always in here eating the licorice. So that's very weird. At the Spite Store strip mall, which, thanks to a great shot of the sign, I was finally able to discern is at 19024 Ventura Boulevard in Tarzana, California. Tel Aviv Kosher Grill still there on the sign from 2020. TNT Nail. The sushi restaurant still there. Valley Jewelry Mart, all of this stuff on the sign, still there the last time Google Maps drove by. Wish Dish Cafe, great name, still there. Latte Larry's and Mocha Joe's for lease. If you want to open up your own, well, I mean, you could still spite somebody. If you wanted to open up a kosher grill or a nail salon, you could open it there because both of them are open. So you could open a spite store if you want. But both Latte Larry's and Mocha Joe's were for lease the last time Google Maps drove by. There's a price war going on. Larry and Mocha Joe are discounting their coffee from, you know, $1.50 to $1.40 to $1.30. I mean, it's
I think
on.
They end up at $1.10 each at a standstill.
Yeah. For a great cup of coffee in LA, I mean, that's got to be a solid deal. Yeah. Ted and Mocha Joe are fighting. I like that Ted is... You know, he's like, I told you, could you at least fix the scones? They're not scone-like. He's coming up. What about coat? You should have coat racks. He's like, it's Southern California. We don't need coat racks, which is a great argument, but a nice amenity. Obviously, it's winning people over. Ted's desperation is hilarious. People are walking into Latte Larry's and he's like, hey, remember me, Ted Danson, coming to Mocha Joe's? Remember me? Hey, cheers, Becker, Ted Danson, come in here. So pathetic and hilarious. Ted tells Mocha Joe he will loan him some screeners to watch because he's like, I can't get out to the movies. You know, he's like, well, I'll tell you what, I'll give you some screeners. These are the things that the Academy sends out so we don't have to go to the theater, but they're watermarked. They say my name and stuff. So if they get out, I'll be in big trouble. So don't, you know, don't let them out the screeners. And Mocha Joe's like, you know, Ted stressed out too. He's like, well, can I get you, thanks for that. Can I get you a cup of coffee? He's like, from here? No, I'm good. Which was a great line. So Jeff, cut to Jeff taking Susie to the airport and he's way too happy. This was, I thought this whole interaction, Susie is sitting there steaming while Jeff is singing what sounds like Hanukkah carols. I don't know if carol is the appropriate name.
It sounded like Christmas music that he was humming at the very least.
Yeah. But he says,
I couldn't pinpoint what song it was.
He might be, is he singing Hava Nagila or something? Yeah, I don't know what he's singing. Maybe we'll find out next week when I look at like the connections or whatever. Sometimes that's listed even under like soundtrack, like sung by Jeff in the car. But he's, I knew this was going bad in a hilarious way because, you know, Jeff, we've never seen him like this. He's literally like skipping and stuff, dropping Susie off at the airport. And she's like, that's it. Bags back in the car. I'm not going. And that is spite. Like, we don't know what she's going out of town for, but to cancel it because your husband's too happy. I mean, Jeff thought he was like in the clear. He thought, you know, nothing was going to happen to this weekend and him being too happy canceled it. I mean, that's a lesson in spite right there. That just to me was so bags back in. So over at Mocha Joe's house, he's there with Mocha Jane, and they're going to put on Green Book. It's at that point that Mocha Joe notices the FBI piracy warning, and the fine associated with it is $250,000 per offense.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's also the additional warning before the FBI warning that says this is a private screener. Once you are finished watching it, snap it in half and throw it in the garbage.
I didn't know you couldn't keep your screeners forever.
Yeah,
I mean, they're working DVDs, you know?
Yeah, I just assumed they'd let you keep them, but it makes sense. Like, no, dispose of this once you watch it.
Yeah, I can't imagine anybody actually does that. First of all, I'm sure that everybody still has, like,
I'm sure,
you know,
so, like, everyone's got a pile of screener DVDs and Blu-rays, yeah.
Like, that would be my DVD collection. But these days, I do know, I think they send you, like, a link that blows up after 48 hours or something. You know, like, it's all digital now, all the screeners. So that gravy train has ended for the Academy. But it's at that point that he calls Larry David. He wants to talk. Over at the country club, all the guys are eating downstairs, even though the heat is broken down there, just to avoid the diarrhea waitress. I thought it was kind of funny that she has diarrhea and her name was Diane. I just noticed a little connection there. I don't know if it was on purpose or not.
Diane-a-ria.
And Larry's telling the guys that Mocha Joe wants to meet. He thinks he's broken him. He thinks this is it. When Larry gets an apology, he'll close up that second. The store's done if he gets an apology. So he thinks that's what's going on here. Jeff backs out of the golf trip because Susie did not go on her trip, so he can't go on his trip. And it turns out Diane is their waitress anyway. She's working downstairs today. She is drenched in sweat. This was disgusting to me, Ted, in a visceral way.
This, like, was pretty gross. This was really gross.
Yeah, she's putting down all their food, and Larry, and this is all, Larry's watching this in slow motion as like a drop of sweat. I can almost not talk about it without like dry heaving.
Oh my God.
This is like you eating chuckles to me. Throwback to the Seinfeld days.
Curb isn't the only show that can throw it back.
Yeah. And so he's watching this on the edge of her nose, this little bead of sweat that finally drips into his soup. Which, by the way, who eats soup when you're already overheated? I do have to point that out.
Maybe, Tim, it was gazpacho.
It could be.
We don't know
Yeah, and it hopefully it was cold enough and not lukewarm, even in that heat. Hopefully it didn't sit out too long. But that was, I mean, one of the... Freddie calls it one of the top five most revolting things he'd ever seen in his life.
I don't know about that.
I was watching it on TV, and I'm like, it might make the top five.
I mean,
definitely, if you saw it in person, it would be way up there.
If you saw it in person, yeah, but like, my God, scroll on TikTok for 3 minutes, you'll watch someone actually die. Like,
no, thank you.
Yeah, like, I'd much rather take soup with sweat in it.
Is it in a revolting way, though, or is it just like, don't, you know what, don't tell me, don't tell me.
Yeah, it's,
but also,
okay.
I've lived through two children, so I've seen some disgusting, literal shit in my life.
Any broken bones? And either of the kids ever broken a bone?
No, you know, I never broke a bone. Did you break a bone?
Me neither. No, I've never broken a bone.
I know. I thought it was something like happens to every kid. You kind of like grow up. You're like, wow, I'm 10 and it hasn't happened yet. Like, when am I gonna go through that rite of passage?
I'll tell you what, though, Tim, if you or I like ever break a bone now, we are fucked.
Yeah, they'll just
absolutely
put us down like a horse.
Fucked. Yeah, I wouldn't expect anything less.
Yeah.
Oh, you broke your ankle. Just right here in the temple, please. I don't want to deal with it.
You know, we have something for that.
I just hold the pillow above my head and nice and easy.
And gunshot sound. So Mr. Takahashi comes by and he pulls it out of them that they have a problem with Diane and that she's, you know, sweating and the food and stuff. And I appreciated the, you know, sort of, there's no classism here where they go, yes, that servant deserves to be fired. All the guys are like, oh, no, nothing's wrong. They're like really sticking up for her.
Yeah, they are.
Which I thought was very cool of a bunch of rich guys to do.
But Takahashi who comes in. He's like, no, we're getting rid of her.
Yeah, yeah. He pulls it out of them that it's Diane and she is seemingly dismissed. But I did appreciate, you know, throwing it back to our Patreon episode. There was no snitching. You know, they didn't snitch on her.
Mm.
But Larry, you know, driving later, he comes upon her waiting at a bus stop and she did get fired. And so he's like, I guess, you know, can I give you a ride home? And Larry defends his position on the sweat and diarrhea, which, you know, again, I kind of think he's right in this situation. But he's, you know, again, he's like, well, I have this coffee shop. I could give you a job. You know, he offers her a job that she, of course, jumps at. She was trying to wait tables and this seems like a good thing to do. And he wants to drop by, you know, maybe to kind of celebrate their new partnership, drop by the BMW dealership for some of the best licorice you've ever had. The story now is that he's going car shopping. Oh, yeah, I'm actually shopping for a new car. I'm here with my friend Diane. She knows everything about cars. She's going to help me out.
She gets Motor Trend. She knows everything. She's like, yeah, I know all the brands.
I know all the brands.
Well, good thing you're at a store for one brand, Diane.
One single brand.
It's like, I know all the phone brands. Well, you're in the Apple store, so there's one brand we sell.
She knows, you know, they're there to see BMWs, but she can compare them to other brands in
Maybe.
Her head, I guess.
Maybe.
I know all the brands. But that's the funny thing, too. It's like, I know all the brands. It doesn't mean I know anything about cars. Ford, like Chevy.
I can name you different car brands. That doesn't mean I know anything about them.
Oh, I know all the brands. I get Motor Trend. But they do make a big show about, now let's look at this car over here. Like literally narrating their lives in the dealership. But it's not convincing that one salesman. And so Larry buys a spite car. He points at, I mean, there were other like regular old sedans sitting around, but Larry points at the BMW i8.
Well, Diane's the one who pointed it out because he defaults to Diane.
Oh.
She's the one, that one. And she's the one who draws the attention to the i8.
I looked it up in a fully loaded i8, which is what Larry said. Yeah, give me one of those fully loaded. The i8 starts at 147.5. The fully loaded apparently goes for $165,000, which I know is not a huge difference, but it's a $20,000 difference, essentially, between the base model and the fully loaded.
And if you're getting an i8, are you getting the base model?
Yeah, why would you? Why would you? Oh, no, $20,000, that's more than I was expecting to spend. I'll stick with the base model.
It's like there's a neighborhood near us that are new homes from $250,000 to $1 million.
Oh my
$250,000 to $1 million, you know, just because I mean they're huge and they're very nice. But I'm like, if you're moving, because this is the wealthy neighborhood. Yeah. If you're moving to the wealthy neighborhood, are you buying the $250,000 house?
I am.
But like, you're already in the wealthy neighborhood.
Yeah, that's the one I'm looking at.
You
maybe
don't have
you're buying...
to live in the wealthy neighborhood. You could live literally anywhere else where there is availability.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, are you saying that like the $1 million houses don't belong there?
No, I'm saying like the 250K is out of place because it's already a nice neighborhood and like you're getting 1,000 square feet for that. I'm like, why move into this neighborhood if you want the smallest house?
Yeah, I guess for the neighborhood, but you can't afford the $1 million one. So, so Larry gets up. I didn't even know the i8 was a car, though. That's how disconnected I am from Larry's world. Like, I'd never even seen that before. I didn't know. It looks like BMW's version of the Ferrari or the Lotus or the Lamborghini or whatever. I mean, it's that kind of sleek sports car, fully loaded. And as a kind of a gift, you know, maybe the salesperson felt bad because, you know, he was trying to call Larry's bluff, but he wasn't lying. He actually bought this car. He gives him a tin of the licorice that they get from Bavaria. So now Larry has his big problem is he's got two cars. And, you know, Larry does ask, you know, Diane what she thinks of the car. And she's like, oh, all the douchebags at the club drive this car. Oh, yeah. He's like, is this any good? She's like, oh, yeah. I mean, it's a very popular car at the club. So he gives Diane the other car. He doesn't need his little, you know, whatever it is, his BMW EV, whatever it is. So he's going to drive the i8. She can have that other car. Driving later, I don't know why they took two different ways out, but they're at a cross street and Diane is on her phone and it endures some beep panic. And because she wasn't going at the stoplight or sign or wherever they are, she ends up T-boning Larry in the i8. His old BMW is fine. The new one's kind of dented. He'll call a tow truck and then, you know, I guess take his other car home. And she's like, what other car? You gave me this car. By the way, one of my favorite lines in the whole episode was, she goes, Diane goes, I guess we should exchange information. He goes, what information? It's all my information. These are both. I loved that. That was my favorite in the whole. I guess it's all my information. These both mine. His new car is going to get towed. And he wants to take back the old car, but that's Diane's car. So he sheepishly asks for a ride up to his house. So at home, he's telling Leon that, you know, I guess he's going to return the new car, the i8, and buy a new version of his old car. And this is all, I guess, so production does not have to actually buy an i8. Although I don't know what they did to destroy that other one. But Larry won't be driving an i8 moving forward. I guess that's the point. Now Larry's... You know, he's like going to back out of the golf thing, too, because he's not going to go golfing without Jeff. And Leon's line here was great. Yeah, that big motherfucker's the glue. I like that. That like, you know, it reminds me of the Seinfeld episode where Elaine and George were trying to hang out or being forced to hang out in some cases without Jerry and how, you know, Jerry was the glue between that friend. Like it didn't really work without Jerry. You know, it doesn't work between Freddie and Jeff and Richard without. I mean, Freddie and Larry and Richard without Jeff. Like, I just liked Leon going, yeah, that big motherfucker's the glue. You can't have a trip without him. But Mocha Joe is going to come for a sit down. Meanwhile, Larry, though, has eaten so much licorice. He's eaten like a whole tin of licorice that he gets an upset stomach and runs off to the bathroom, leaving Leon guarding Mocha Joe. But then Leon has eaten so much black licorice, of course, because he eats only black food. He gets sick as well, leaving Mocha Joe free to sneak around Larry's house and steal all of his screeners. Back at the country club, Freddie thinks that because Mocha Joe walked out, he's just negotiating. This is a negotiating tactic.
Wait, I don't know in what way this is a negotiating tactic. I just would assume, oh, this guy hates me and he... decided to leave because I was busy shitting my brains out.
Loudly. And they both take down. There are two downstairs bathrooms and they both go into one. I'm like, oh, I would try to make it upstairs. A shit like that with company. I'm going to my bedroom. I'm going to the ensuite bathroom.
Larry's got two downstairs bathrooms. It's kind of weird.
You know what I've heard?
And they're right next to each other.
anytime you'll read about like a celebrity selling their house or something like that, and they're like, yeah, it's got 6 bedrooms and 10 bathrooms. And I found, and you've probably seen that before, and what I learned is like that is for rich people who entertain. There's like lots of bathrooms downstairs, and they're probably like, they may be full, they may be not or whatever, but it's because they entertain, and you need a lot of, you essentially need like a men's room and a ladies' room or lots of them because you have a lot of parties.
Okay. Yeah.
So, for a rich person's house, I was like, yeah, that, I don't know if there is actually a bathroom there or if production was like, just run around the corner. But yeah, I always found that interesting when I found that out, because I always read like, yeah, like Adele selling her house. It has, 10 bedrooms and 20 bathrooms. I'm like, why does every bathroom need two bedrooms? But that's why. Freddie says it's a negotiating tactic. Larry drops out of Pebble Beach. Richard Lewis isn't going either. Richard Lewis is like, yeah, I should be rehearsing anyway. And Larry's like, can we get a little taste of the character? And so we get a little bit of Richard's portrayal of this mentally challenged character, to which Larry David bursts out laughing. See, I think this was done as respectful as possible. Like, I'm guessing when we learn about Flowers for Algernon, and maybe even if we looked at some other adaptations, we might see that Richard Lewis was trying to do the work. That's my guess. That they didn't make up a fake play about a fake mentally challenged person, like Simple Jack, for instance, in Tropic Thunder, that could be seen as problematic portrayal of a mental. I don't think Richard Lewis was trying to be funny. I think Larry laughing at a mentally challenged or portrayal of a mentally challenged person, but he's not even laughing at that. He's laughing at his friend trying to act, So I don't even think he's laughing at his friend failing at the challenge. That's what Larry wants. Richard Lewis is genuinely, I think, trying to attack this acting challenge, and Larry is laughing in his face. I don't think they're making fun of mentally challenged people. Do you have a counterpoint? I'm willing to listen.
I mean, not even like a full counterpoint. It's just, it's another example of doing the voice.
Yeah. Did you have to? Yeah. Did you have to even do this in the episode?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we've brought this up many, many times, and I'm sure I'll be called, soft as shit.
It's your turn.
It's my turn to be called soft as shit by like the worst people that you could ever meet or ever know in real life. But like, you don't need to do the voice.
Yeah, I mean, the counterpoint to that is, if you want, it's not Richard Lewis doing it. It's Richard Lewis, the character in Curb. So if you want to write a media or a script that tackles this in whatever way, it kind of has to be a part of it. And
it's in the same way that Larry David, the man, has, to we know of anyway, at least on camera, has never said the N-word. Larry David, the character in Curb Your Enthusiasm, has said it a bunch of times.
Yeah. He hasn't said it in a while, which is the only reason we lost count. Not because it happened so much we lost count. We just stopped counting.
And it hasn't come back post that long hiatus, whenever they came back in 2016. And I would be stunned if it happens in the finale of season 10 or at all in season 11. Because it sure as hell didn't happen in the highly publicized and highly watched season 12.
Yeah, it's sort of like a necessary evil. You were worried when I stumbled on the end, weren't you? It's sort of a necessary evil. that if you're writing this, you got to do it. Unfortunately, I don't think that mentally challenged people are the butt of this joke, which I think is what we always try to analyze. I think Richard Lewis is the butt of this joke.
Yeah, I would agree.
This is a friendship-ending laugh to me. The way that Richard Lewis and Larry David treat each other is like, I'm trying to do something serious. You're literally laughing in my face. Like, could you imagine if, like, you played a radio bit for me that you were really proud of, and I just laughed at how stupid it was, or how stupid I thought it was?
I mean, Tim, our friendship does have one of those moments. I don't know if you remember it.
No, what? Did you laugh at something stupid I did?
It was the inverse, because it was one of the it was before I knew how much time, care, effort, and love you put in to the end of the school year graduation remixes.
Oh, Really?
You don't remember this?
No.
Oh man. Well then, I will not bring it up because I don't want to open this can of worms again.
You went like, I think you heard it and you were like, oh, who did that cheesy piece of shit or something, right?
Something like that. Yeah, I don't remember exactly. Because
I think you thought like Woody put it together or something.
I thought it was. I don't know who I thought it was. I don't know if I thought it was Woody or if I thought
or maybe
it
Chris
was
at the time or
Chris,
something.
Yeah,
maybe Woody or Chris. You did it. Thank
and then
you
and then I say. Ugh, this sucks. To the person who
Did
made
you hear
it.
Hear that cringe?
So, yeah.
I guess you're right. Well, I'm glad you remember that and think about it. I hope it keeps you up at night.
God damn it.
No, I had totally forgotten about it until you reminded me. I did need some prodding, but it came flooding back. Yeah. But it wasn't you weren't the target audience. I'm still defending it like 3 years after being fired from radio.
No, and you know, like even to this day, like looking back on it, like I wish that I had, you know, the time, the resources to put something like that together because, you know, there's a lot of high schools in our area. Yeah. You know, I would love to do something like that. But also, you always had like a much better like eye, because you fucking see audio dumb shit. You had you had a much better ear for like, okay, not only was this like a hit song over the last year, but it's got like a good tempo. I can I can find a good karaoke version of this to use for the verses. And I can go interview all of these kids about what they want to do with their future. Like it was a perfect cosmic gumbo.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, our audience appreciated it. Our audience of parents who heard and kids who heard their friends on the radio. It's like it works great for, you know, smaller markets, which is where I always was. Like I didn't even attempt it. Well, mostly because I got here and COVID started. So there was no high school, but I don't even know if I would have attempted it in Pittsburgh where there's 1,000 high schools. Where the hell were we? At the country club. And, oh yeah, I was talking about the friendship ending laugh in the face of Richard Lewis. And Freddie, but I liked Freddie trying to build up Richard Lewis. He's like, no, no, it's hilarious. And Richard Lewis is like, it's supposed to be moving. It's a dramatic role. And then Freddie's like, oh, I mean, it was moving. It was very moving. I love that he's like, No, it is hilarious. He's like, it's not supposed to be funny. He's like, oh, I mean, it's really moving. I like Freddie's backpedaling on whatever you want to hear. It was good to counteract Larry's laughing. They run into Jeff and Susie as Larry is leaving the country club. And, you know, and Larry's driving a white car, which Jeff, you know, gives him shit about, which I thought was kind of funny. It's not a bit they really explore that they've ever mentioned they hate white cars before. I guess it's something like, that's extra douchey. I don't know. I couldn't quite put a bead on why they thought driving a white car was douchey. I'd never heard that before. I guess I see plenty of people with white cars, and I didn't think it was a douchey thing. But I liked Jeff giving shit about it anyway. And I like Larry saying, I'm inside the car. I can't see what color it is. And Jeff's like, I don't believe you. He thinks it is getting to him. He's like, I can't see the hood. I don't know what's it. He's like, I don't believe you. And he's like, it's like being inside your body. I don't know what I look like. And I love this quote from Larry. It's all happening inside the capsule. Everything's coming from inside the capsule. I just loved that. I just loved that saying. And he gives Susie, because she's being so mean to him, he gives Susie the tin of leftover licorice that he says she should eat in one sitting if she can. Just sit in front of the TV and chow down on this. Over at Latte Larry's, Diane is not there and they're really swamped. So he calls Diane to see where she is. And she's like, oh yeah, you know, I'm not going to do that. I quit. Instead I'm going to travel. You know, I want to do some traveling, take advantage of this free time. And he's like, what do you mean travel? You don't have a job. You don't have any money. She's like, oh, I got a lot of money from selling the car.
Well, she says I sold my car.
I
and
sold
got a lot
my
of money.
Car. Yeah. And Larry's what the fuck. I mean, it was one of the best. I don't know how many times he said it, but maybe the best one in the whole series. I loved. And it's the house all over again. It's kind of crazy that we're rehashing something from just the previous episode. Yeah, just the previous episode. Now Larry has given someone a gift and they've sold it. Larry, we've already done this. We just did this. Did you forget? We did it just last week. I thought that was kind of weird. All over again. And then a man in a wheelchair gets a case of beep panic. It's hay panic, he calls it, because he's in line waiting to order, scrolling his phone, and he doesn't notice that he's next in line. Someone goes, "Hey!" And so he throws his phone and slams the wheelchair into gear and hits Larry as he's walking in front. I recognize this wheelchair man. I got his name from the credits, Brendan Jennings, and I know him as the janitor from AP Bio. Glad to see an AP Bio actor.
I didn't even make the connection. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I recognize this guy. And Larry's line here was great. He's like, I'm probably never going to walk normal again. No offense to the guy in the wheelchair. Jeez. Oh, I mean, I guess it's not so bad.
Yeah, like I knew I recognized him from something, but like, nope, just didn't make the connection. Oh, he's the janitor from AP Bio. I'm like, oh, what do I?
Yeah, maybe
know
it was the chair.
From?
I don't know. And he's also one of those comic actors.
He's got a very distinct face too.
Yeah, because he's I think he's been in a bunch of stuff too. Mm. I mean, you see him pop up everywhere in any funny thing. He'll probably have a role. He's just one of those guys. But Larry's like, I'll probably never walk normal again, saying it to the guy in the wheelchair. It's at that point that the FBI shows up. As he's icing his knee in the back, the FBI shows up with a copy of his screener, and Larry accuses Mocha Joe, as he's being carted away, of the scheme that he has figured out, but it doesn't matter to the FBI. They've got their man who is distributing screeners illegally. Over at the Morgan Wixon Theater, which is still at 2627 Pico in Santa Monica, right now you can see Agnes of God, the play there, or you can see Willy Wonka Jr. Those are the two things playing there. But at this time, Richard Lewis's play, Flowers for Algernon, is playing. And Larry David is, in the back, not really wishing his friend luck, but, you know, just kind of taking his confidence down as far as he can before he goes on stage. Whatever the opposite of break a leg is, that's what he's saying. I hope your legs are fine. I guess that'd be really bad to say to an actor. I hope your legs work at the end of this.
Would it be bad luck inducing?
Probably. I'm going to say it to an. I'm going to try. I hope your legs work perfectly after you're done. Don't let anything happen to him out there. I'm sure nothing will. Like, no, I want to break a leg, damn it. But Richard Lewis got the licorice from Susie and ate it all in a fit of nerves, really. And Larry says nothing about what may be brewing in Richard Lewis's intestines. But Larry is watching the play as the licorice hits Richard Lewis. And Frolic starts to play, and he's being distracted by his gastrointestinal distress, and that is the end of the episode.
Oh, right, Tim.
I do want to mention
this week.
Oh, well, sorry. Sometimes I pick out names from the credits, and I noticed Tim Stack is in this episode as Bert, and I think that might, I don't know who that is, but you know Tim Stack. Remember, we've talked about him because he was in Seinfeld, and he was in Son of the Beach, and I know you remembered him from maybe something else. But I don't know which one. I think he might be the doctor that's talking to Richard Lewis, but I didn't go back and look. I might have to do that. But I was like, Tim Stack? Why didn't I recognize Tim Stack? I don't think he's the salesperson at
the
BMW place.
Absolutely the doctor in the play. He's
okay.
Absolutely the doctor.
There we go. Question answered. Yeah. Because he's like, Richard Lewis is distracted, and he's like, didn't you want to say something about not planning to whatever? Like, he's trying to like plant lines in his head while Richard Lewis is trying to not shit his pants, or maybe is shitting his pants. So Tim Stack re-enters the Larry David cinematic universe. So that is it. Besides, the only other homework we had is Flowers for Algernon. What's the deal?
What's the deal? What's the deal with
What's
Flowers deal? For Algernon?
Yeah, who is this Charlie? How offended should we be by this episode? We'll find out.
All right, Tim, what do you like for cover art this week?
Maybe Larry and Leon, like, going through their stuff, going through what they were going through on the couch, sitting in front of Mocha Joe. I think their distress would probably be readable in a still picture. Maybe something with Diane and the table. Like, I don't want to look at that bead of sweat, even in an email that lets me know the episode's been posted.
Maybe, like as she's slapping down on the table after saying that she's got diarrhea.
That could be good. I think there's a good shot of the whole table and her in that case. Yeah, that might be good.
All right, I'll see what I can make work. Let's see what we can do about this week's description.
Okay.
So we had Larry finds himself indebted to a struggling waitress and draws the ire of Mocha Joe.
I mean, I like the first part. Draws or finds himself indebted to a struggling waitress, I think is pretty good. But it, I mean, we can bring Mocha Joe into this. It's not really that important. But we could say, like, do we want to give away as much as, like, Mocha Joe plots?
What about
his revenge?
What about and develops a love for Bavarian licorice?
I think
because that's the undoing. That's the main undoing of the episode.
And what about this? Indulges in Bavarian licorice.
In Bavarian licorice.
Do we want to say overindulges, or does that give too much away?
That gives too much away, I think.
Okay. All right. I like indulges in Bavarian licorice.
I mean,
yeah, we're laughing at it. We made it up.
We're laughing at it. We're laughing at it. It's allowed. But Tim, that's what we can come up with our human brains. Let's see what the robots can do. So let's get into Curb Your Enthusiasm.
All right. Hopefully I don't have to log back in. I just kind of opened up. All right. Please write a synopsis of episode 9. Season 10, and what's it called? Oh, Beep Panic. Oh, I can't wait to see what it comes up with for Beep Panic. Beep Panic is on the way. Oh, I finally got it in. That's my Oasis impression. All right. In Beep Panic, Larry David becomes obsessed with a particular sound in his life, the incessant beeping of a faulty smoke alarm, which, by the way, did happen in an episode.
Hmm.
You remember that led to a fire in his house because they threw out the fire alarm. But it was not this episode. It was about 20 years ago. Determined to silence the noise. No, it was an episode with the Blacks, I know, because Loretta was there. Determined to silence the noise. Oh, and the cock cake. It was a good episode. I like that one, obviously. Determined to silence the noise, Larry embarks on a mission to locate the source of the beeping, leading to comical misadventures and confrontations along the way. As Larry's quest for peace and quiet intensifies, he finds himself at odds with friends, neighbors, and strangers alike, all while navigating the absurdities of everyday life in his own unique way. How about a run-on sentence, ChatGPT?
Jesus Christ.
That was garbage. Absolutely the worst. Even though it did happen in an episode, not the way they wrote, of course, but yeah, the worst. No, not close at all to this episode.
Okay. Well, Tim, did you like this episode?
Yeah. I mean, I think I laughed a lot through even talking about this again, so it might have even bumped up a little bit, you know, but I think it was probably on par. It's I've never had this happen before where I have my star bell curve, but it's exactly equal to whatever episode I star bell curved. It's like
okay. The
great average episode. I can't give it a full star. Maybe I'm a little star shy because I already have like 9 stars this season. But I had a good, you know, I think Abby was a great addition to this episode. She is great playing off Larry. She reminded me a lot of the way Carrie Brownstein played off of him in her episode. And so, you know, she was a real high point of this episode that I liked. But I can't do any more than a star bell curve 2. Okay. Never done before.
Wow.
We're breaking new ground.
New ground has been broken.
What about you?
I'm just going to give it a regular old star low, I think. I'm not trying to break new ground here or anything.
Yeah, I could see that. I could give it a star low, but honestly, I think it's higher than that. You
okay.
know, that's why I have to
that's
do what
fair.
I had to do. Yeah.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, next week we have got season 10, episode 10, the season 10 finale, titled The Spite Store. Original air date, March 22nd, 2020. We are into the pandemic.
Everybody's home.
Everybody's
home. We're wiping
home.
Our groceries.
We're watching Curb with the entire family. If you're looking at TV Guide that night, you are going to see Larry runs into an old acquaintance and causes a rift between expectant parents.
Oh, Larry is always getting the middle. If it's about a name, I might just lose my shit because he does that way too often. But I guess we'll see. It doesn't mention anything about the spoiler that we got, but maybe the old friend has to do with that.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'm going to understand them not wanting to give that away. So we will see next week. So is that it?
That's it.
All right. For No Hugging, No Learning, I'm Tim Murphy.
I'm Ted Hollowell. Be good.